Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the capitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Favette, the tilt thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
All right, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Improverbial. Lisa and I are not sitting in the same room.
Oh.
No, yeah, we're across town from each other. We're on Zoom this time.
I know, because we thought we'd wait until COVID was starting to wane before we started implementing our COVID protocols and doing
right,
Zoom.
Yeah, we're always a little bit later on picking up on these fads. I think you can call the pandemic just a fad, right? It's just something that's in fashion.
Yeah, and it's so out now.
It's so out. I you've got like 90210 sideburns, Pete, and I've got like Melrose Place hair, and we just think we're still in with that. But in actuality, I've got a cold, and we just thought it would be more prudent to be apart.
If we learned you guys, we don't have to be in the same room.
Yeah, it's no not offense. As fun though, Pete. I have to say, it's not as fun. But
I really enjoy breathing all of your. Your exhalations. I miss that about our relationship.
Well, I'll be sure to give you some audio of my illness, just so you can really feel it and be steeped in this. But I'm feeling fine. If anybody out there is worried about me, I feel fine. It's just a very clogged nose. So
okay. So anyway, your usual dulcet tones are somewhat muted today. So you know, when things get tough, the tough get going. We are. Our proverb today is one that's very useful in a pinch.
In a pinch.
Yes. Well, I'd like to warn all you folks. We have an explicit language warning on this from top to bottom, because our proverb today is when the shit hits the fan.
Yeah.
When the shit hits the fan.
You never hear when the caca hits the fan or when
Wait. You do find other things hitting fans.
Oh, you do. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm just saying the popular phrase is the shit hits the fan. We're nothing but authentic in our podcast. So we really need to use the nomenclature that is part of this proverb.
We're classicists here, really. So the meaning, of course, is this is the unmistakable effects of shit being thrown into like an electric tabletop fan. More or less, it's the moment when everything blows up in a bad way.
In a really bad word. There's all of a sudden there's a bunch of trouble happening.
Here's my usage in a sentence.
Okay.
Monique and her lover were in flagrante delicto when her husband, Armando, burst unexpectedly into the room. And that's when the shit hit the fan.
That you're using really eloquent language
Thank you.
The very end there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Armando lost his shit. Another use of this very verse.
There was like a big shit show that happened next.
Shit storm. Yeah. All kinds of shit went down then. Yeah. So you want to talk about the origins, where this came from?
Yeah. What did you learn?
My first clue was this has to be like a tabletop fan. It couldn't be a ceiling fan, because how the hell would shit get up there? You know, really, if you know, it's going to hit a fan. It's got to be somewhere more accessible than that. Portable fans were invented around 1880 in the 1880s. So it must be after that. There are some rumors that this was in circulation in the 1930s and that it's possibly Canadian, but the first time it seems to have been found in print was in a book by William Daniel Jones in 1943. That guy, just side note, William Daniel Jones, really interesting guy. He was a gangster. He was in the gang with Bonnie and Clyde. So W.D. Jones, look him up. But there's also examples of other things hitting the fan you were talking to. What kind of things do you think would hit a fan?
Well, I mentioned caca. You said that there, caca or juju has... Is there
That's just another word. The other things that have hit the fan in different expressions and euphemisms, eggs, pie, soup, and also, quote, stuff. But shit is the worst.
So there's somewhere in usage, like when the eggs hit the fan. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay. When the soup hit the fan. I mean, soup hitting the fan would be kind of a mess, but it doesn't best cumber your room the way shit hitting a fan would be. Referring to a previous episode, Hairy Bears. Go here, check it out. You'll learn the meaning of the word best cumber.
Oh, that was good. I was like, wait, I know that word. How do I know that word?
You'll be such a Rantalian, Lisa.
Ooh, nice call back there, Pete. Thank you. Folks, if you have not listened to Hairy Bears, you need to. I just re-listened to it. We're hilarious.
Yeah, I'm not sure if this is smart or not, but I sent it to my mom. It's very rude, everyone. It's got a lot of rudeness in it. And most people probably wouldn't share it with their mom, but I went ahead and did that.
So then there's a lots of different ways to say it, but I agree with you. I think shit hitting the fan is the most illustrative. Mm-hmm. And also I think, yes, the most fragrant and brings about the most all of our senses, right? You can picture it. You could smell it. You can really associate this with there is a big mess and there's no getting out of it or getting it off of you.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you should mention that because I found this really cool online publication, JSTOR, JSTOR. There's a writer on there named Chi Liu, and she wrote this article called A Linguistic Case for Shit Hitting the Fan. And I mean, there's so many gems inside this article. She says, why use an idiom and such a colorful one at that when a more direct, more serious statement describing what's happening might suffice? And then the problem is that it's so impactful. She says idioms are the quote fossilized poetry of language, which I thought was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? She said that, and this is a great part. She says, just in her words, she's got some amazing words. Just as excitable paleoscatologists find value in fossilized excrement of an ancient age, so might we delve into the whys and wherefores of even the most disreputable scatologically adjacent idioms. I love that's what we do.
Oh, scatological idioms.
Yeah. I mean, nice. Okay. So paleoscatologists, right, would be like people who study ancient turds. Uh-huh. Right, yeah. Scatological, ever pertaining to shit.
I love that. You know, it's just funny. I have a friend who works for a nature conservancy around here. And one of her roadshow things, like when she goes out to events and she wants like kids to come to the table and learn about the conservancy, she's got a whole tray of scat, right? And it's rubberized scat, but she's got all the scat of a fox, of an otter, of a bear, of a rabbit, of a deer. And then you have to identify all the scat. And there was a publication here I just picked up, and there's my friend with her scat tray. And I sent her a text. I was like, there you are with your scat once again. And she's kind of known for it. So good.
The turd tray.
Her turd tray.
That's like more alliteration that way.
I do. I like that. I appreciate that.
Well, so I dug a little bit further into this and how the idiomatic expressions are often like inscrutable and the individual words don't always reveal the sense of the whole phrase. Like what I mean by that is like, what's better about the long end of the stick? You know, like the short end of the stick or long end of the stick? What difference does it make? If you're getting poked with it, you probably want the short end, right? And then she also notes that because of these idioms kind of fossilize over time, they get ossified. When you change even a little part of them, it turns like a cultural shorthand, like something like, I don't give a fuck, into like an ironic wink, like not a single fuck was given by me. Right. You can kind of take this hardened phrase and tweak it a little bit and make new things give it a new ironic sense. When I was also thinking about the way you and I are like obsessed with phrases and turns of phrase and the power of to convey information that these things have. There's a thinker called Tony Hoagland, and he points out that the great trick of idiom is the quickness with which it fabricates intimacy between speaker and audience.
Yeah, and the quickness and or the distance, right? Like if we know it, it brings us close. If I don't know it, it makes me like we're coming from different worlds because when you have the turn of phrase and we know it, we automate. It's like a secret code or a shortcut to a big idea. But if we don't know it, it then will give us a big distance, right?
It creates inside groups and outside groups. Like that whole idea of like Cockney slang, you know, rhyming slang, where like you know, I don't really know those, but like you know, the trouble and strife. It means like your wife, you know. Okay. And it's kind of, if you and I both know this Cockney rhyming slang, then we can communicate in ways that both makes us more intimate and makes the non-person who doesn't understand it more distant.
Right. Be an outsider to our culture. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. So I don't know. Did you have big thoughts?
I got a couple things. The one I was thinking about is just like shit flying around. And
I love that thought. It's a beautiful thought.
That's what I was thinking about. And what was the word again?
Best cumbering.
To best
means cumber. To spatter something with shit.
To spatter with shit.
Or spray shit upon.
Yeah. So, you know, there's machines that are built to best cumber, which such as a manure spreader, right? So yeah, I wanted to look up manure spreading. And, you know, of course, manure is a fertilizer.
Such fertile ground to investigate. Such
fertile ground for us to talk about. they have evidence that about 8,000 years ago that early humans or early civilizations were using manure as a way to fertilize. They noticed that where, let's just say, an animal had done their droppings, the next season, that would be extra green right there. So through observation, they saw this. And so they started to then use these droppings and put them where they wanted instead. And of course, all of this was by hand. That's how they would do it.
Nice.
Then they had, you know, the shovels came about. And it wasn't until 1875 that Joseph Kemp came up with the first manure spreader. So it was thousands of years that this was mostly by hand or by some implement like a shovel. And so Joseph.
Wouldn't it be easier just to like move your animals around and let them poop where you want them to?
Yeah, but then aren't they trampling on things that you want to have grown? Yeah.
I don't know. You have to choose. Do you want them to trample? You want to carry shits in your hands?
You got to choose.
Yeah.
So, of course, this was Joseph Kemp's invention was driven by horse in the 1930s when the first tractor pulled manure spreader came about. And, you know, when we think about this, we don't normally think of poop being associated with their future food. Right. It's
I sure don't like thinking about that.
I sure don't. But, you know, this composting process, which I'm sure you know a lot about, but there's
what you trying to say?
I'm saying that you shit a lot. Okay, go ahead. No, that of course it's the composting process that makes it takes out all the pathogens and the things that would be bad for us.
Of course.
And there's heat that's generated and the heat is generated to a point where the pathogens are killed. And now it's just the nutrients that you have left over. So, you know, it's, you know, that shit, if it hit the fan, Pete, and we let it stay there for a little bit, we compact it. It would be good for our garden. Just, you know, I'm thinking about this for our gardening, right?
Wow. You know, I have a slight diversion here because I've just been reading this most amazing book called Entangled Life by Merlin Sheldrake. It's about funguses. And fungus, I mean, I could go on and on, but funguses are fungi, as he called it. Fungi. He's got an English accent. He's actually got the most beautiful, soothing, quiet voice. And he says things like, fungi connect us all. No, it's just the most beautiful thing. Anyway, fungi can do things like decompose like radioactivity. They can decompose cigarette butts. They can take toxic things and convert them. They create the enzymes that are required to break them toxic things down. And then what comes out of them sometimes can be like edible fungi.
We can eat cigarette butts.
It's the craziest thing. There's so much. Like if you read this book, it will do two things at the same time. One of them will make you go to sleep because this voice is so beautifully soporific. And secondly, it will blow your mind, which is a weird experience to fall asleep and also blow your mind. So you should try it.
It is.
Merlin Sheldrake.
I was just thinking about this idea of shit hitting the fan. Like, what is that all about? And it basically is about chaos. So I wanted to think about chaos theory and also chaos in life, you know, chaos theory having to do with, it's basically a study of apparently random or unpredictable things, behavior, especially like in mechanics and mathematics, that actually is governed by a system. So it appears to be random, but it is actually deterministic in nature.
Come on.
And I'll give you an example of that we can all relate to is weather. Weather is a really good example of chaotic theory. This idea is, you know,
you can predict it, but there's like so many factors that we have not yet been able to capture all the factors. So the closer we get, the, you know, in the next 10 minutes, we're going to be fairly accurate. The next hour, 2 hours, fairly accurate. But as soon as we get a day or two or three away, the farther it gets, the less accurate we are.
Yeah.
So that is an example of that chaos theory. And you know, this idea of chaos, it also brought to mind, you know, the work that I'm in education and schools, like the shit is hitting the fan every single day. And in some cases, if you're working with toddlers, it's literally every day. But I'm talking like in elementary school age children, that chaos is what educators live in all the time.
And
I really hats off to them. I was in the classroom for several years and then I was ahead of school for many more years. And you notice I'm not doing it anymore. That was my biggest form of, I don't like to use the word burnout, but let's just say the thing that really tired me was the chaotic nature of it day after day after day after day. And you could get as organized as you wanted. And every single day it was out the window because what was in front of you was what you had to deal with.
A whole bunch of crazy kids.
I don't know. Crazy kids. It's crazy systems. The heater's gone out. A teacher's calling sick. A parent's in your office when you walk in because of something that's happened.
There's like a diaper blowout.
I mean, that's normal, right? You plan for that. But, you know, the basement being flooded is not, yeah. You know? So I always used to explain it. Like, if you look at it as a business, like our business is people and minds. And that is completely unpredictable. So when you're dealing with people, it's chaotic chaos theory in the sense that we can't plan about that. We can do our best.
Especially dinosaurs. Yeah. Chaos and dinosaurs. Like, forget about it. If you try to mess with dinosaurs, they're going to come after you. I'm just, I don't know, Jurassic Park.
Thank
you, Jeff Goldblum.
did you have in mind?
Oh my gosh, I have so many things to say to that because Merlin Sheldrake talks about diapers and fungi and food. And he says that Mexico City has some massive proportion of its waste is in the form of dirty diapers. Remove the plastic and you put these fungi in them and they can reduce the mass of these diapers by something like 85%. And the result is edible mushrooms. I know. It's weird.
I love that idea though, because I mean, diapers are really, that's a huge type of waste. It's really
bad. That is really where the shit hits fan. I do have to say one last thing in closing on this part of our podcast, which has to do with idioms. And we talk about, that idioms, like no matter how like shop worn or cliche they might be, do this thing about bringing people together, right? Shared language equals shared belonging, just like you were alluding to earlier. And idiom comes from the Greek word idios, which means one's own. And nothing builds well-being more effectively than community. And one's own language engenders community. I think that's part of why I love words so much. They're the currency of connectedness.
I love that, Pete. I think that's a beautiful place to leave it. And I love your words, Pete. You give me more words and I feel more connected to you and community and history and the world when I talk with you. Well, here we are, Pete, in one of my favorite parts of our podcast. We are here with the part that is completely made up. We are improvising this next part where we make up a new proverb based on words that have been given to us by our listeners. And then we give it some etymology and some background. Are you ready for that part, Pete?
Ooh, we're going to make the whole thing up, Lisa.
We're going to do that this time.
It's going to be all lies, like every time.
Like all those lies we love to do. Oh, and I need to point out that this is sponsored by the Boardman Review, who we love.
This part's true. That little part is true right there.
Yeah, the Boardman Review is a real thing. It's a literary magazine that does a lot of great things up here in Northern Michigan and spotlights a lot of great artists and creatives in the area. And one thing that they give to us is a machine that takes all these thousands and thousands of words that we get from listeners, and it puts it through this beautiful algorithm, mixes them up, and
that's chaos theory. There's some chaos theory into it.
There's some chaos theory as well. There's a fan. there's a fan as well
yeah.
that every once in a while we need to just put just a tiny little turd in front of that spews the turd around.
I hate that when we have to do that part.
I know, especially when it's your turn to provide the turd.
I know. Mine are the worst.
Yours are really, it's bad. It's really bad, Pete.
But okay, we'll gotta wipe it off.
All right, here we go. I'm gonna put some gloves on before I touch the machine.
I don't blame you. Were
just there. All right, yeah. Here we go. And the first word.
Tummy ache.
The first word is, it's actually two words, is tummy ache. Tummy ache.
All right, now it's my turn. I don't really. You know what? Can I get that stick? Give me the long end of that stick.
Here it is. There you go.
Okay, I'm gonna poke this button right here with the stick.
Tofu.
Oh, my word is tofu. This word just came out. Tofu.
Oh, Pete. Yes, the tofu and the tummy ache. This reminds me of the proverb that we're all probably very aware of.
Yeah.
And that is 2 tofu, 3 tummy aches, 0 beehives. You know
how that's no beehives.
There's 0 beehives. The 2 tofu, 3 tummy aches, 0 beehives. That
I never understood the 0 beehives part.
Oh gosh, that's an important part of that is the beehives. Yeah,
hopefully you can help me get my head around it here.
We can unravel this one. We can start with the beehives. The beehives, you know, the apiary sciences have been around, especially in the Las Vegas region. The world. I mean, it hasn't, obviously the apiaries have been there before Las Vegas, but they really came to form when the casinos were there. So there's a long, long history of beehives in the Las Vegas region. But when the casinos came about, it really was a boom for them then.
Well, I read about how the native people of that region were pioneers in apiary sciences.
Oh yeah, they had the.
I didn't know that the casinos were such a boon for that, though.
Yeah, they had those bees trained. Like we kind of think of beehives now in those boxes, but they had them. They had them trained. They weren't in boxes at all. They were lined up like little soldiers.
Wow, that must have been taking a lot of training to get that. Bees to do that, because bees are known for being kind of chaotic.
They do. They are chaotic. But if you give them a little bit, just a little bit of sweet water with just a tiny bit of whiskey, those bees, it's the sweet water's attraction. And then the whiskey gets them lined up.
Oh, and I guess that's why the casinos, feel good at the casino, because everybody knows about whiskey and casinos.
Yeah. I mean, there's an association, but it has to do first from this origin. Of course.
See, well, yeah. So, like, I guess the story will come out how it became to be 0 beehives, because that was a part that, like, how could it be a good thing, or was it a bad thing to have 0 beehives?
Well, if you want to dive into that right now, so yeah,
let's get into the history because it's so fascinating.
So of course, tofu. Now we think of tofu is made up with soy. It's usually soy. But that's not how it always was. I mean, you know this part.
Yeah. It used to come, actually, this part I did do a little research on. I was able to find out about early, the original people in the lands of Las Vegas, they had developed this technology for taking the flesh of various kinds of cactuses and desert plants, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And they would separate the spines from the flesh, and then they had to chew it. Over long periods of time.
Yeah.
And then they would chew it, and then they would place it into these woven baskets. They were woven out of the native grasses of the area. And then they would press it. They would stand on them. They would
press them
with the weight of their bodies.
Weight of their body. Yep.
And then the warmth from their body would induce fermentation in this material. And it would then become this solid matter.
It's a solid matter. And of course, English had already kind of integrated within some of the cultures. And it was because they were standing on it. They started with the toes, right? The toes were part of it.
Yeah.
And then the foo was a little bit like fooey. It's weird how that came.
Yeah, well, Fooey, that's a nice way of saying it. You're always so kind. I know. Because everybody knows, like, what happened was that they would stand on it, and then when the white man would come along and ask them how they make this delicious material out of this, they would say "F you."
They would. And so, the white man said, "Oh, it's something to do with their toes, and something."
And they always say "F you" when they're on it, so it becomes tofu.
Yeah.
That's the origin, real actual true origin of that phrase. Yeah. And then that was co-opted when this fermented soybean stuff that was also fermented vegetable matter, came from Asia, and so they just thought it must be the same family. So that's where tofu came from.
But it's a really completely different than what you would go get at your organic food store and get, you put in your stir fry. It's, yeah, as you said, it has cactus origin. And it was interesting. You needed two tofu, like the two tofu was significant, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Okay. Yeah. And then the tummy aches, yeah. I think that this is because I have a culinary background. I'm really interested in the weight, like, and in Asian culture and Japanese culture, there's puffer fish that you can eat, but you have to only in a certain way.
Yes,
it's like a deadly food. It can really, really, you can die from eating puffer fish if it's incorrectly prepared.
Yeah.
And this original tofu, you wouldn't die. You just get a tummy ache if you ate it, if it wasn't properly prepared.
So it isn't necessarily poison. You would just have a really, really uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. It was super uncomfortable. It actually would cause explosive diarrhea anytime there was any kind of a wind nearby.
Yeah. And I think
it was so sensitive that any kind of a breeze and
fan was going or something
like liquid jets of feces would erupt from your bum.
Pete, this is, we're getting to where these beehives came in. Cause as you can recall, we've got these bees and they're lined up like little soldiers doing what they need to do to make all the sweet honey for all these great people that are doing wonderful things in this vast land. And
that was a key ingredient. I think that's one thing I did get was like something about the honey had to do with like key ingredient, the tofu.
Well, this is what happened, that the white man, as usual, comes in loving this tofu that the Native Americans are making, mm-hmm, and they're eating it. They're eating it like it's candy or popcorn, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another contribution of Native Americans. And but the Native Americans always says, it's only two. It's two. Yeah. Two tofu. Yeah. Two. They didn't call it tofu, but the white man did. Yeah. But not the white man. And what does this do? Of course, they get not just three tummy aches, they're getting like 620 tummy aches. And they've got
620, not 620. That's a lot of tummy aches.
Yeah, they got like 620. You heard of that phrase, the 620.
I'll have to do that idiom in another.
Yeah, they were getting 620. The 620 tummy aches.
So many tummy aches.
And of course, what happens is explosive excrement. The honeybees could not withstand that. So, we've got problems with the mites now, but before it was white man, shit hitting the fan, figuratively.
Right.
That wiped out those bees that were such great little soldiers.
So they had to eat two centuries. They'd eat two different tofus. So I'm going to get this straight for once and for all. They'd eat the two different tofus, right? Because if they eat just the one, they would get 620 tummy aches.
Yes.
Or something, right? And but you do eat the two, you only get three tummy aches. And I guess it's worth it because it's so damn good. Is that what I'm getting? This tofu is so delicious.
It's so good. And a lot of people couldn't restrain themselves, but you kill off an entire species.
Oh my God.
When you do it.
It's tragic.
So, I mean, I think that's where this proverb comes from is when you are so enthusiastic, you're blind to your consequences.
Right. I always knew that part, that like it was like when you're so enthusiastic about a thing that you just overindulge in it, and then unfortunately terrible things happen, right? So that's like, you want to use it, explain how it might be used in a, like, let's say I couldn't stop eating so much like cotton candy and elf ears at the Northwest Michigan Fair.
You would be like, hey, Pete, you know what they say, two tofus, three tummy aches, zero beehives.
Cut back on that stuff or else the shit's really going to hit the fan.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Improverbial. Do you want to improvise with us? You can yes and The Improverbial podcast and be a sponsor. Please reach out to theimproverbial@gmail.com.
Yeah.